Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
I'm Michelle Martin, a Chinese money manager whose stock fund has climbed 52% in 2020, says May is no time to shy away from equities. In case you're wondering, Wang Rongxin is his name, and his Chonggang Xinruan Private Equity Investment Fund, which launched in August, has benefited from bets in 5G, electric vehicles and pharmaceuticals, paying off. Warren Buffett, on the other hand, says there's nothing to buy and he's accumulating cash. So, Is there light? Are the clouds parting, so to speak? What does May hold for investors? Let's find out with Arun Pai, my guest today in Money and Me. He's Chief Strategy Officer at Asia Collect. Arun, how are you this Friday morning?
I am very good, Michelle. How are you?
That's good. I want to start with a potential point of worry for investors, though, Arun. Are investors worried about rising U.S.-China tensions, their threats of tariffs, and also accusations over COVID-19's origins? Still, though, U.S. and China trade heads are going to meet through through a phone call as soon as next week. So there seems to be uncertainty over progress over the U.S.-China trade deal, uncertainty over Washington pushing for Taiwan to have a seat at the World Health Organization. In U.S. elections month away and the world is still grappling with COVID. What are markets worried about when it comes to U.S.-China tensions?
Seriously, right? I mean, we thought we were done with this whole U.S.-China discussion after the first signing of the trade agreement, but oh boy, not even close. I think, you know, this is obviously a lot more of a deep-seated rift between these two superpowers now. And I definitely feel this is going to be one topic that we will be talking about the rest of this year and beyond. You can see that Trump and, you know, Pompeo is definitely out for blood with various kinds of insinuations that the COVID crisis origination was in a lab in Wuhan, and that there was a massive cover-up. In the month of January, China actually started to import a lot of PPE from across the globe, knowing fully well that there is massive human-to-human transmission. China, on the other hand, is obviously fighting back, saying, we basically locked a city or a county of like 70 million people, and we obviously did not do this just for the fun of it. How did the world not understand that this is a massive pandemic that's occurring in our borders, and it can very easily translate into the same problem happening in yours? There's definitely a massive divide conceptually, theoretically, in the way the two countries go about doing their business. You know, the pure capitalism versus semi-socialism, a pure democracy versus a one-party rule in China. And I think the biggest problem with this is going to be, the rest of the world suffers when these two juggernauts are going to war. Last week, we talked about this massive issue of tech standards being very different now. Right. Like, there's going to be no worldwide standard. And if that happens, consumers as a whole across the globe are going to suffer because the best practices are not taking place. And you have now you take these other examples of what's happening to countries like Australia and even Singapore for that matter. Australia initially obviously sided with the US, saying we need a full inquisition as to where the origins of the virus were. And then what did China do? They started releasing all these, news articles saying, I'm not so sure if our students are going to be safe in this country. And underwent many other trade walls were erected. When that happens, the economy starts suffering, and Australia has to kind of backtrack from that statement. I think we're going to see a lot more of this posturing over the next 3, 6, maybe even a couple of years, for that matter, going forward. And that's definitely not going to be beneficial to the investor who looks and aims for a little bit more of a stable environment to try and invest their money.
Are you at all interested in China in terms of infrastructure? There was a trial of real estate investment trust announced last week in China. And as China rebuilds, some are looking to what's going to help fund these infrastructure projects. So, are you optimistic about China getting back on its feet?
Sure. So in terms of headline news, the numbers that are coming out of China even if you take them with like a pinch of salt, whether they might be a little bit exaggerated, it definitely seems like the country is able to effectively, you know, lock down everything when the COVID pandemic was rearing its ugly head. And now they've been able to a large extent, try to get the train back on its track and get the economy humming again. But from the perspective of an investor who is sitting far away from the inner workings of what's actually happening within the country, it becomes extremely difficult. The number of cases, especially related to fraud, even something like the Luckin Coffee IPO, the business model should have been a relatively very straightforward, like the digitized version of Starbucks to some extent. Order coffees online, rock up to like a your neighborhood store, pick up the coffee, and you're good to go. But even in cases like that, which have relatively transparent business models, the numbers had a lot of fraudulent elements to deal with. And I think investors should be extremely careful when you're dealing with cases such as that and investments such as that. And it might actually be better to identify a trustworthy fund manager who has a very stellar track record and potentially invest with them rather than trying to do due diligence on individual names, which is potentially a little bit more easier to do in countries where the rule of law is a lot more strict, like Singapore, Hong Kong, and the U.S.
Got it. Let's look at some corporate earnings. And speaking of transparent business models, people are wondering if they should pick up stock in Disney. It's an icon, a real legend, but second quarter earnings are in for Disney. And it said COVID impacted its biggest segment, parks and experiences. Disney offering no guidance on the third quarter. Disney's profit dropped to whopping 91% during the first 3 months of 2020. As an investor, Arun, what does the future look like for Disney and its media empire?
You know, it's interesting. I was having a Zoom call with a friend of mine who is based in New York, who had a couple of kids recently. And he was saying, you know, I can't believe the massive economic moat that Disney has created for itself, especially with the launch of Disney Plus, which is their online broadcasting network, which is perfect because you have a couple of kids who are now locked in at home. They are sitting and watching Mickey Mouse, Frozen, you know, you name it, on the television. So you're paying close to like anywhere from $6 to $10 for that on a monthly basis. The same kids will want all sorts of, merchandise off Disney, which obviously Disney is selling. Give it 3 or 4 months, the plants will open up. The same kids will want to go to those theme parks and plants. And what do? You spend a lot more money over there. Disney, while obviously, you know, this quarter, everyone anticipated earnings are going to be terrible, right? Like the theme parks and cruises, which is a massive chunk of their revenue as well as profit, were basically shut down. As an for an investor, I would like to think the smart thing in the longer run of stopping the dividends in the first half of the year to basically reassess what the situation is going to look like towards the latter part, and potentially see if they can reinstate that dividend. My biggest concern, though, is, and this is slightly more generic and not just for Disney itself, when the government is announcing all of these, we're going to start reopening the economy, and the government has basically mandated that Disney can start opening up its theme parks, but at a 30% capacity. Now, the question then becomes, sure, you know, like obviously, from a government's perspective, it's a sensible thing to do. You can't just open up the spigots immediately and anticipate that the massive flow will start immediately. But the problem is, as a business owner of, say, these theme parks, or, say, an airline owner, or, say, a restaurant owner, if I am being told that I have to open up my shop with only a 30% operating capacity, while, sure, I can try and squeeze my costs and bring them down a little bit by having potentially like fewer service staff, in the case of theme parks, you know, potentially fewer admission gate attendants, etc., it is still a massively loss-making operation as compared to potentially just shutting down the entire thing and going on like a hiatus for 3 to 6 months. And I'm really curious, and I sadly don't know what the answer to this is going to be, but I think it'll be very interesting to see that a lot of investors have taken the sign of things slowly opening up as a very positive indicator. And sure, to some extent it is. But what the effects of that will be in terms of cash flow burn over the next 1, 2, 3 quarters, because until a vaccination comes out, you know, will 100% of the world population be willing to go into these theme parks and, you know, act as if it's business as usual?
Right.
I don't think so.
Right.
And that's something to be extremely concerned about.
We've seen the participants of the sharing economy really badly hit, like Airbnb and Uber. So a broad question is, do you think that theme parks, movie theaters, cruise liners, businesses that depend on crowds are essentially dead businesses for the next couple of quarters?
It's going to be extremely difficult to tell, right? Like you see Airbnb, they furloughed like 25% of their staff. Uber came out with its earnings yesterday or day before, obviously at a massive loss, but the CEO came out saying that Uber Eats has done substantially better than before. Leaving aside the business model of the unit economic of losses for each and every service that they deliver, with the hopes that in the future they'll be able to rake out a profit, I think it will be extremely difficult to see how a business, especially in this whole sharing economy scheme of things, will be able to generate even any kind of profit, not to mention that they're not generating any profit right now. How and in what shape will they be able to come out with in 6 months' time? Airbnb is a great example, right? Would a consumer such as like you and I, if we're hypothetically, you know, in 4, 6 months' time, when the economy opens up to some extent, when our borders open up, and we have to travel somewhere, would you rather trust, say, a Marriott, which, sure, it might have more number of people in the initial, like, the welcoming hall or something, but you know that they have a team strength of, like, 100, 200 cleaners, ensuring that the room is always tidied up and kept and disinfected for every new visitor, all on a daily basis, vis-a-vis something like an Airbnb or Uber, which might not have the same cleaning standards, and as a consumer, potentially willing to risk your health on it. I think it'll be really interesting to see what happens in the next 3 to 6 months, but I personally am not very optimistic of that.
Yeah, it's going to boil down to brands and trust, as you say. Let's look at more earnings. Great Eastern Holdings posted a 90% drop in net profit to 33.9 million Singapore dollars for the first quarter ended March 31st. This from 342 million Singapore dollars a year ago. Now, Great Eastern said this was due to lower valuation of investments arising from unfavorable financial market conditions. What do you make of the company's fundamentals?
Right. So an insurance company like lives and dies by the sword in the aspect of two things. Firstly, ensuring that their risk team has extremely stringent criteria on how to price these insurance policies. That's number one. Number two is how they manage their float. Now, float is something like, you know, you and I both have health insurances. We always pay money upfront to insurance companies to insure us for potentially, you know, darker days in the future. So we give them, these companies, money up front for a potential payout in the future. What these insurance companies do with that money when they receive it is invest it. And that becomes kind of like their economic moat, where they are receiving money today for a potential payout in the future. And that's exactly what something like a company like Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett's company, has made truckloads of money on. Now, when we come to Great Eastern, and especially during times like this, when the markets take a massive beating, a lot of this float has been invested into bonds, but potentially into equity-like instruments also, because at the end of the day, these bonds are giving such minimal interest. So it might not be like, you know, they started out probably going with like treasuries and government bonds. They realize that, you know, they're only getting like 1 or 2 points of returns on that. They start edging into the further risky end of the spectrum in terms of high yield bonds, potentially even equity. So that is where they've taken the massive hit, because obviously we saw the public market from, you know, like mid-Feb to mid to the third week of March taking a massive beating of like 30-35%. Coming to Great Eastern more specifically, they had a decent tailwind in terms of having their marketing channels, especially in Singapore and Malaysia, being able to do a really good job of getting a lot more customers in the first couple of months. But I think the issue is going to be the next quarter, because now with these lockdowns, the last thing on a person's mind is potentially going and being willing to meet with an insurance agent at your neighborhood coffee store, where a lot of these insurance policies actually get signed. So it really depends which insurance companies have been able to take the digital transformation path, create a seamless UX, UI experience for consumers to purchase this insurance, and hopefully be able to ride through this tide. Great Eastern is counting for something like 20% of OCBC, which is their parent group's profits. So, you know, obviously, while shareholders of Great Eastern can be concerned, the larger conglomerate of OCBC, investors should definitely pay heed to what Great Eastern's next couple of quarters will be looking like, because that's where the potential pain of the COVID crisis might be felt even more.
Yeah, we're going to look at the future of insurance in a show next week. Arun Pai, my guest this morning in Money and Me, he's Chief Strategy Officer at Asia Collect. Okay, news just in. So we have to talk about Singapore Airlines, which has just said it expects to make full year net loss for the first time in its history. Well, the news is just out. SIA saying this as COVID, of course, continues to hammer the global aviation sector. We know that SIA is looking to be flexible with its aircraft fleet. So Forbes has reported recently that SIA is looking to sell or lease back aircraft. This could potentially raise cash for SIA. What do you make of SIA? Is it the stock to buy now?
Right. Like, you know, airlines is obviously, I would say, the number one industry that is suffering the most during this COVID pandemic. And we could see, like, you know, over the weekend, there was the Berkshire Hathaway shareholder meeting, and Warren Buffett came out saying that he has basically sold down all his stakes in all the four major airlines in the U.S. Mm. And he owned nearly 10% of all the airline stocks over there. It's interesting to hear the rationale where he basically said, I have no idea over the next 2 to 3 years how people will react to this COVID epidemic, where you've been having business meetings that are taking place through, you know, Zoom, Google Meets, Microsoft Teams, etc. Whether these high-flying spenders, whether these companies will be willing to risk their employees' health, and of course, whether employees are willing to risk their own health to sit in a tube 20,000 feet in the air with a potential 150 to 250 other passengers, where the spread of the virus is highly likely. And couple that with an industry that is extremely capital intensive, and which is exactly why SIA is doing the smart thing, like they have to raise cash, be it obviously with Temasek / the Singapore government, sale and lease back of these airlines, or through any other means possible, they have to try and raise cash to try and hopefully tide over this crisis for the next 2 or 3 quarters. But let's take an example, right? Like, again, coming back to the topic that we were talking about in the beginning. Fast forward 3 months down the line, would you be willing to sit with 2 or 3 people on the same row of an airline? Now, potentially not, which is when the airline starts policies of saying, okay, you know what? We will ensure that the middle seat is going to be vacant. Mm. But if that happens, either you have to double the prices of airline tickets, which obviously will mean a massive collapse in demand. But on the other side, your operating costs are still basically the same because the amount of oil required to fly that airline, the number of stewards and stewardesses required, the number of pilots required to ensure that it's a safe flight is give or take the same. Maybe they can, you know, reduce operating costs by 5 or 10%. Mm. But at a 50, 60% operating capacity of an airline, they are definitely going to make a loss in every single flight, which works really well if you're like a private company, which Uber was or something back in the day, and you have VC money. As a public company, I think it would be a whole different other ballgame. So it'll be very interesting, which is exactly why what Warren Buffett was saying as to why he sold down his entire airline stock portfolio. The problem is nobody knows how and when this epidemic will end, and in what shape will the long-term effects of it be?
Indeed. Okay, speaking about Warren Buffett, 12 years ago during the last major financial crisis, Buffett seized on low share prices to purchase lucrative stakes in companies like Goldman Sachs, General Electric. Currently, though, his company Berkshire Hathaway is sitting on nearly $140 billion in cash. He hasn't made any purchases, says there isn't anything to buy. What did you make of Buffett's messages to investors? I think it was Saturday when he spoke.
Right, indeed. It was really sad because 6 years back, I actually attended the Warren Buffett shareholder meeting in Omaha, Nebraska. And it was honestly, Michelle, it was like a rock concert, right? Like you had 50,000 people from the ages of 10 years up to 60 or 70 years old waiting in line at 7 a.m. And I was one of them.
Wow.
Waiting in line at 7 a.m. for the doors to be open so that we could literally rush in and try to get a good enough seat so that at least you can see these guys on the podium talking about it. And these guys are basically these two 90-year-olds sitting on the stage, eating peanut brittle and Coca-Cola and drinking Coke, answering questions for 8 hours,
It
was phenomenal. And it was really interesting because, I think I was 25 years old at that time. And you're waiting for the board of directors of the company. First, all the spectators, all of us wannabe value investors walk in. And then the board of directors of the company walks in. And the net wealth of the Coliseum increases by $500 billion. And you're oh, wow, this is something pretty impressive.
Wow.
But anyway, coming back to...
He's still drinking Coke.
He claims that he is something 70% Coke on his body, right? But it was such a sad scene to watch right now, when it's only him and Charlie Munger, his right-hand man, could not make it because he's based in California. And even though they obviously have their own private jets and stuff, they thought it's not the best thing to do right now in terms of traveling. So it was Warren Buffett and the head of operations of all his non-insurance companies, Greg Abel, sitting on the podium and answering questions. I think a couple of things to take away from the entire conference coming to the present is, firstly, his belief that, the world might not be in the best situation right now, but talking slightly more generically, to say plus or minus 5 or 10 years, the world is in a much better state than it was 50 years back as compared to what it was 100 years ago, as it was compared to 200 years ago, especially America. So his faith in the underlying economy in the U.S. and the world in general is definitely unwavering. But a thing to note, things that were a little bit more fearful for me as an investor were two things. Firstly, exactly what you mentioned, right? He talks with his wallet. And at the end of the day, this guy ended the quarter with $140 billion. And the only things that he did in that quarter was literally selling all the airline stocks. He did not buy anything. And when he was asked about that, he mentioned that $140 billion is a lot of money, but it actually might not be enough, given how bad things can potentially get. And that's scary. I mean, even though the company is a $500 billion market cap, it has its tentacles spread through every aspect of the American economy, you would think $140 billion is enough, but it's not. Another thing he kept answering was the words, "I don't know." And when the Oracle of Omaha is asked a lot of questions and he flat out blatantly says, "I don't know the answer to that question," it just goes to show what uncertain times that we are living in, which has never, ever taken place in our history. And it might make sense to keep a little bit of spare buffer in your portfolios in terms of cash, waiting potentially for the opportunity to try and reload that bazooka.
Beautifully said. Well, thank you for that, so vividly taking us to a meeting that I think most of us have only experienced on YouTube. Appreciate your time as always. Have a wonderful weekend, Arun.
My pleasure. Thank you, Michelle.
Arun Pai there, Chief Strategy Officer at Asia Collect.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg.
or download the SBH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.